Writer-director Aaron Sorkin knows his way around a courtroom drama. He wrote the screenplay for A Few Good Men nearly 30 years ago. Now he's written and directed The Trial of the Chicago Seven.
The new movie dramatizes the trial of a far-flung group of anti-Vietnam War activists, including Abbie Hoffman, Tom Hayden, and Bobby Seale, who were each charged with inciting violence at the 1968 Democratic National Convention. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. We're talking about the trial of the Chicago Seven on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Aisha is longtime NPR contributor and culture writer Bilal Qureshi. Welcome back, Bilal.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you for having me. And hi, Aisha.
Hi.
It is a pleasure to have you. So the trial of the Chicago Seven picks up after the inauguration of Richard Nixon in 1969 as Nixon's new attorney general is gathering prosecutors for a case against a far-flung group of activists. The violence at the Democratic National Convention had included a lot of clashes with police, and the Nixon government was looking to put organizers on trial. But many of the defendants didn't even know each other, and many had vastly different motivations and philosophies. The film is full of very flashy acting. You have Sacha Baron Cohen as Abbie Hoffman and Succession's Jeremy Strong as Jerry Rubin of the Yippies, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II as Bobby Seale of the Black Panthers, Eddie Redmayne plays Tom Hayden from Students for a Democratic Society, and John Carroll Lynch plays pacifist David Dellinger. Most of them are represented by the lawyer William Kunstler, who is played here by Mark Rylance. And that's not all. Frank Langella plays the judge Julius Hoffman, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the prosecutor Richard Schultz. Aisha, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of the trial of the Chicago Seven?
Well, there's this type of movie, I think, that comes along probably every year. Hollywood makes these big, flashy movies, and they are based on a true story. And I always wonder to myself, or think to myself, this could have been a documentary, or this could have been like a really well done expose, journalistic expose or story. And I feel like this falls into that category very easily for me. It's not the type of movie that I usually gravitate towards, as much as I love some of the performers who are in this, especially Yahya Abdul-Mateen, who I will watch pretty much anything in at this point. He's really great in the role of Bobby Seale, which is a difficult role to play because if you watch the film and if you're familiar with the real life story, he's kind of an outsider for this entire trial. So I came to it feeling as though this really, really could have been a documentary. It opens with a woman moaning over the opening credits. You'll know that familiar sound. It's like, And as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, I know where this is going. I know it's Sorkin. It's going to be very hackneyed. There's going to be a lot of moments that feel overly Hollywood cinematic and this attempt to distill very serious issues about the government, violence, protest, all of these things. And it just feels really, really too Sorkin-y in some ways. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more. But this was not a movie for me.
All right. How about you, Bilal?
Yeah, I think I echo a lot of what Aisha would say, but I also just remember thinking at the end, I was like, that was just okay. I mean, I also had moments when I felt like I actually could have just listened to this as a radio film, which is a weird thing to say, but it didn't feel particularly cinematic to me in a lot of ways. It felt like a lot of, as we've talked about, dialogue. There were lots of splashy kind of monologues that people delivered in which they were representing ideas and positions. But I felt that it didn't, for me, live up also to the notion of watching a movie for 2 hours because I didn't find it that compelling as a piece of cinema. It made me think a lot about Aaron Sorkin as a kind of, because he's the director here as well. He's the writer and the filmmaker. And I definitely think that given that this comes 10 years actually to The Social Network, which is one of my favorite films, it made me really think about what it would have been like if this was directed by somebody else and not directed by Aaron Sorkin as well. Because in the case of The Social Network, you had David Fincher, you had the music that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross did that was so incredible. It just had this combination of what Aisha said, Aaron Sorkin-ness and kind of, I think sometimes hackneyedness merged with a kind of dark mood and something really interesting and searching. And I just felt like this was so earnest and heavy-handed in a lot of ways. It just was not that compelling or memorable for me. And I also really struggle with this idea of a movie ripped from the headlines that feels really relevant to our times. Police brutality, case of protest, is it's sort of like there's the two wings of progressives that are fighting. It's the anatomy of a progressive position. And I also find that, okay, so it kind of has echoes, but is it a good film? And is it something that I actually really enjoyed for that time? And I would say no. As I said, it was okay. And 2 hours of streaming time spent.
Well, that in and of itself isn't such a bad thing in this day and age. So Aisha, you're coming down as meh, and Bilal, you're coming down as meh. Is that a fair representation?
Yeah.
Okay, so I went into this film kind of exactly the way Aisha did. The first couple minutes, you're getting a lot of that historical drama stuff where it's like an actor walks out and you're told who they're playing, and you have a lot of that like really clunky exposition. You feel the gears kind of grinding up as like, okay, so Sacha Baron Cohen is doing Abby Hoffman. And also I have a lot of conflicted opinions about Aaron Sorkin, who I tend to find very, very frustrating. So I'm really like those first couple minutes, I'm like, man, I'm not on board. And then for me, it clicked completely into place and I kind of loved it. I found it pretty thrilling for solidly 2 hours until it kind of builds up to the point where it's so orchestral and speechy and stompy that it kind of lost me again, like right at the very, very end. But for solidly like 2 hours, I was enormously entertained and I was actually struck. I think Sorkin is widely and I think generally rightly viewed as a better writer than he is a director. But I found this film really well paced. I started watching it kind of late at night, thinking, well, I'll watch like an hour of it and then pick up the rest of it in the morning. And I wound up staying up until 3 a.m. watching the whole thing, which to me is really a sign of somebody who has their pacing in order. I think he did a really nice job of balancing a lot of the machinations of the courtroom drama with a lot of really interesting behind the scenes stuff about the conflicts within this movement and the different personalities and the different aims and objectives. I found really interesting. So I really, really enjoyed it. I expected to be more mixed on this movie, but came out of it really, really positive.
I'm curious, could you describe what the moment was when it clicked for you? Was it a certain performance or a scene? I don't know. It's for me, it never hit that stride for me. And I'm very curious to hear if you like have a sense of when that was.
I think for me, really, once it got done with the throat clearing about who everyone was, I also appreciated the fact that there's not a ton of throat clearing before it gets to the trial itself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes with these movies, they wind up getting so caught up in the kind of buildup and backstory that you're kind of waiting for the movie to get to the fireworks factory. And this movie gets to the fireworks factory pretty quickly. Kind of once there's a trial in motion, I just found it really compelling. I think that I don't think of myself necessarily as a big courtroom drama person, but I think this is a really good courtroom drama.
I will give it that in that I think the more traditional way this type of movie would be treated is that we would see all of the action happen first and then mm-hmm. the trial would be the last part. And I think it was interesting to see the way in which Sorkin intersperses through flashback the events that happen and the different perspectives that take place and what led to all of these men being arrested and what led to, you know, Bobby Seale being implicated in all of this, even though there was so little evidence to prove that he had anything to do with, or that any of them really had anything to do with one another in a direct way. So I did appreciate those moments, but oh man, I just do think that, as Bilal was saying, the cinematic way in which this is filmed, it just felt like the impulses of the worst of the Elia Kazan's movies. Like, and I'm a fan of Elia Kazan and things like On the Waterfront. But at the same time, I feel like there are moments where it just feels so pat myself on the back for this moment, especially towards the end where there is a literal slow clap that happens, an actual slow clap. And when that happened, I was just like, I couldn't get past it. And I wish that this could have just been a documentary. And I think there have been documentaries, and I think I might check those out instead.
I have to say, the other thing that I've been thinking about, Aaron Sorkin is sort of the star of the show in a lot of ways. And I was thinking about the last few years, what he's been doing since The Newsroom was one of the last things I remember watching of his for like a little bit and not really being able to get through for much beyond its first few episodes, because it had similar sort of like he was going to reflect on the state of our media industry and have a lot to say about it, and it was going to be done in this dramatized way. And then his To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway, which I know has, it also generated some very interesting think pieces about sort of the way Aaron Sorkin treats race and liberal politics and the way that it sort of grafted onto what he was trying to say about the Trump era and yet also missed opportunities to say. And I felt here too, I mean, you know, one of the starring elements in this film too is white liberalism. Like, what do white liberals do? Because there is Bobby Seale, but there is essentially, the film is about the fight between a very activist-y person and a more centrist person who has to decide whether you work through the system or work out of the system. So I found elements of it also felt like, in 2020, are we ready for more expansive examinations or anatomies of like progressive positions? And I know normally movies can be more than just their politics, but this is an Aaron Sorkin film, so it is about its politics and it is about its ideas. It wasn't a David Fincher film, so it's an Aaron Sorkin movie. And for me, it felt like Aaron Sorkin was hard to forget, given what he's been saying and doing in the last few years as he seeks to present to us what a progressive centrist position, not even centrist, I don't know what it is, West Wingian position.
Center left,
kind of good democratic position on things would be. And I just found it felt a little dated. And instead, I would have rather seen a late 1960s documentary with archival footage, with interviews with people, that was much more about this time than Sorkinized time.
I will say, I've watched a lot of Sorkin, and I totally hear you on Sorkin's politics and how often his work gets filtered through this very Sorkin-y kind of center-left approach. I was surprised, actually, how fair I thought this movie was to perspectives that I think are pretty clearly other than Aaron Sorkin's own. I think Sorkin sees himself in Tom Hayden, who is a little bit more of a within-the-system guy among these people, but I thought that he represented the perspectives of people like Abbie Hoffman, who I'm sure are not Aaron Sorkin's jam. I felt like he was representing their perspectives in ways that felt thoughtful and fair. And that was a little bit surprising to me as somebody who is often frustrated with how much Sorkin sort of writes his own opinions into his characters.
Yeah, I guess I just come down on to this question of, like, when it comes to this type of movie, who is the audience for this? And in some ways, I think when you have such a splashy cast as, such as this, it is for the Academy voters. This is the type of movie that is going to be, in a normal Oscar year, would be like, for your consideration, all eight of these actors, some of whom have already won Oscars. And then there's also, you know, the older crowd, I think, you know, my grandparents, your grandparents, who would go see this movie. And I mean, I don't want to compare it to Green Book because it is not that offensive, but like, no, I think no. There is some overlap in that type of audience, like the good liberal white people who will go see this movie and think, oh man, yeah, I remember the 60s. I remember that time. And yeah, that was right on. And look how far we've come, or like, look at how this resonates with now. And I think that there could have been so many more ways, as Bilal said, to do this in a slightly more interesting way. And it wasn't done here. And maybe Sorkin's not the one to deliver that, but that's what we have. And that's what this movie is, I guess.
I mean, I don't think anyone could come away from this movie necessarily thinking, look how far we've come.
True. No.
I think it is drawing pretty clear parallels to the present day.
Yes, sorry, I misspoke. Not look how far we've come, but, you know, I should say this is what we need to get back to, is this sort of fervor, this like, this need to rail against the quote unquote the man and all of those things. But I think there's only so much that a movie like this can do and that we can expect it to do. And maybe it's a little unfair to want more, because movies, that's not where the politics stop. It's maybe where they begin or where ideas begin, but it's not where it stops. But I wish it was more interesting.
I want to just add that on the splashy performances front, Frank Langella, who plays the judge here, which is a very...
He's the villain.
Yeah, he's very villainous. And again, I would like to watch the documentary also to know how in real life, how villainous he apparently really was. But I will say that this performance is quite heavy-handed as a performance too. But I was thinking about Frank Langella representing kind of the Nixon old kind of crotchety man sort of character who's kind of get off the lawn is sort of his vibe the entire time, that actually when he played Nixon himself in Frost Nixon, what a great performance that was. It made me think about kind of I've been there before with Frank Langella in that time period, and that was a really great film. My mind wandered to many other great films that sort of connect to this film, but aren't this movie. Like, I love Mark Rylance. I love David Fincher's The Social Network. I was dreaming of a lot of those movies while watching this. And that, I don't know if that is a good thing, that this is kind of a socially networked film in that way, or if that's actually a bad thing. But Frost Nixon, a little tip to that if you're interested in that period of time too, because it was a great performance by Frank Langella.
Yeah, I mean, I think Langella in this, I mean, it is definitely an Oscar clippy kind of performance for Langella. And that particular portrayal is kind of one of the few things that didn't really land. I mean, all that character is missing is getting pushed into a swimming pool.
Right. Exactly.
But I was surprised at how I thought across the board strong a lot of these performances were. I thought Mark Rylance was terrific. I thought Sacha Baron Cohen as Abby Hoffman, I mean, that's a very, very tricky performance. Like, you're doing a certain amount of impersonation and you already have the presence of Sacha Baron Cohen. I was surprised at how quickly, for me at least, I was able to accept that that was Abby Hoffman and not Sacha Baron Cohen. I don't know, man. This movie just worked for me. I don't know what to tell you.
We have different positions, as do the characters in this film.
Exactly.
We should be cast in a Sorkin film. We'd be great.
All right, well, we want to know what you think about Trial of the Chicago 7. It's on Netflix now. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it'll be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor WeTransfer. Are you perfectly happy with the way things are right now? Are there any doubts you have about the world as is? If so, perhaps they deserve your full attention. Perhaps they could even change things for the better. WeTransfer's set of tools is made for just such an endeavor. By helping you collect, sketch, present, and share the ideas that all started with doubts. Meet Paste, Paper, and Collect by WeTransfer. Go to toolstomoveideas.com to learn more.
Support also comes from Madewell. Their experts use premium fabric and the latest denim technology to make jeans in fits and styles for everyone. Whether you're looking for a super comfy pair that really moves with you or want to keep it old school in 100% cotton, you're sure to find jeans you're going to reach for again and again. Go to Madewell.com and use the code NPRDENIM for $20 off your online jeans purchase. Terms apply. Please see Madewell.com/promos for full offer details.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Aisha Harris, what's making you happy this week?
What's making me happy this week is a movie that is new to me, Sisters, which is an early film by Brian De Palma. It was a movie that was kind of on my to-watch list for a while, and now it happens to be streaming on Criterion as part of their 1970s horror collection. So I went into this knowing very little about the movie beyond the fact that the premise is about a conjoined twin played by Margot Kidder who occasionally murders people. And I watched it and I was surprised at how progressive it was. You know, Brian De Palma, he's the director of Carrie, Dressed to Kill. And depending on the film, sometimes his politics, especially when it comes to women, can be questionable or dubious or just plain out offensive. But this movie actually is a lot more feminist than I expected it to be. And also there's a Black character in the film who, in a horror movie, I don't know if it's a spoiler to say, but he lasts way longer than Black people usually last in horror movies. But yeah, it's just a really fascinating movie. It's short. It's 90 minutes. It's streaming on the Criterion channel right now. If you have it, I highly recommend it. It's very interesting.
So that's Sisters from Brian De Palma, not to be confused with the 2015 Tina Fey, Amy Poehler Sisters.
Very, very, very different.
Very, very different movie. All right. Thank you, Aisha Harris. Bilal Qureshi, what's making you happy this week?
Well, I've been feeling in lockdown kind of nostalgic for the 90s, which is my adolescence. And one of the things that has revived this month is Mariah Carey with her new memoir, The Meaning of Mariah. And I bring this up because there's a great profile and interview with her in New York Magazine that Allison P. Davis wrote that I have just come to reading. And I was already kind of in my 90s throwback, going back to Butterfly, which is one of my favorite albums, and learning a lot more in these profiles and interviews with Mariah Carey, who I know in some ways has kind of been a bit of a strange pop culture character for some time.
She's an elusive chanteuse.
Exactly. And I have to say, I haven't followed her as closely as I maybe could have or should have. But I will say that what's been so great is revisiting kind of how significant her career was at that time and how interesting that album was as a collision between kind of white pop and black music and the leaving of Sony Records and all of that. And the stories of that are also threaded in some of the conversations she's been doing around just Mariah Carey and race and how she's read and wasn't read. And I have found that that discussion around her while going back and listening to that album, which is a really great album, actually. And so I've been having a bit of a Mariah Carey revisitation festival and enjoying it and finding, you know, a release of a memoir like that can sometimes be sort of a cheesy cultural event. But in her case, there is an interesting thread to sort of, you know, music and race and America and pop music and how the industry's changed. And that one particular piece in New York Magazine is a great conversation that I would recommend to people. Or just listen to Butterfly, which is such a great album.
Yes. Seconding that.
Thank you, Bilal Qureshi. So this week, picking a What's Making Me Happy could not be easier. Louder Than a Riot is a new podcast from NPR Music. It was put together by my wonderful colleagues, the great Sidney Madden and the great Rodney Carmichael. You've heard them both on this show, but Louder Than a Riot is a totally different kind of podcast. Basically, it's a piece of long-form reporting about the intersection between hip-hop and the criminal justice system in America. A few episodes have rolled out already. You get everything from kind of a general overview of the subject to this really in-depth look at the rapper Mac Phipps, whose lyrics ended up getting used as evidence against him in a manslaughter trial. Sidney and Rodney are such great thinkers. They've done a bunch of like just really fascinating thinking and reporting here. The show is rich in music and voices, and it's such a compelling story. I just so highly recommend. Please subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts. That's Louder Than a Riot, a new podcast from my magnificent colleagues at NPR Music, Sidney Madden and Rodney Carmichael. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow me at I Dislike Steven. You can follow Aisha at Crafting My Style. You can follow Bilal at B Kilal. That's B-Q-I-L-A-L. You can follow editor Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy and producer Candace Lim at The Candace Lim. You can follow producer Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week when we'll be talking about the new David Byrne concert film, American Utopia.
I'm Rodney Carmichael. And on this episode of Louder Than a Riot, did bias against rap lyrics seal the fate of No Limits' Mac Phipps?
This guy shouldn't be incarcerated. And I know that his music got him incarcerated, but they got the wrong guy.
Listen now to the Louder Than a Riot podcast from NPR Music.